We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Stand by for news.
News on the mark.
Newsroom in New York.
You have tuned in turn on the news, the weekly newscast from the radio network, with all the radio coverage of the radio. Now with computerized news readers, with fewer meddling humans, and more aggregated reporting and automated music. Tune in turn on the news each week for the latest news, radio art, and more from our robot reporters, making sure you hear both sides, good and evil, every time you turn on the news.
And then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
Well, today's hearing is the committee's last this month before reconvening next month in July.
Netflix presents the most terrifying series of the summer, Stranger Hearings. This July, they're back. A ragtag group of middle-aged kids trying to take down a monster terrorizing the quiet little town of Washington, D.C. But one girl, Elle Cheney, will fight against the Gore Republicans who are turning democracy into the upside down. Stranger Hearings.
Today's January 6th committee hearings. Today's installment was huge. It was gigantic. It was super big gulp. Because the committee painted a chilling and criminally insane portrait of an attempt to steal the election by weaponizing the Justice Department, courtesy of former President Scammy Doofus Jr. At the start of the hearing, Liz Cheney recapped what we've seen so far.
We have seen how President Trump persuaded tens of thousands of his supporters to travel to Washington, D.C. for January 6th. And we will see in far more detail how the president's rally and march to the Capitol were organized and choreographed.
That's right, it was all choreographed. A 5, 6, 7, 8, storm stomp, window smash, kick, ball change, jazz hands, zip tie them. Today's hearing was led by Illinois Republican Adam Kinzinger. Kinzinger explained how important it is to keep the presidency separate from the Justice Department.
The president cannot and must not use the department to serve his own personal interest. And he must not use its people to do his political bidding. The president cannot pervert justice.
Yes, even if the president is technically a pervert. The key witnesses today were former acting attorney general Jeff Rosen and former acting deputy attorney general Richard Donahue. These two guys took over the DOJ after Attorney General Bill Barr saw where the former president's crazy chain was going and said, this is my stop. Kinzinger asked Rosen what happened once they took over.
Mr. Rosen, on Christmas Eve, your first official day as the acting attorney general, President Trump called you. What did he want to talk about?
The same things he was talking about publicly.
So low-flow toilets and windmill cancer? But keep in mind, this was on December 24th. What a lovely way to spend Christmas Eve. Was the night before Christmas and all through D.C. The POTUS was screaming, the winner was me. The conspiracies hung like a stench in the air, as thin and as fake as the president's hair. The former president, Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap. The former president was persistent, as Kinzinger explained.
In the weeks leading to January 6th, the Department of Justice was fielding almost daily requests from the president to investigate claims of election fraud. Each claim was refuted time and time again, an effort Attorney General Barr described as whack-a-mole.
And when that whack-a-mole didn't work, they would eventually go on to whack Mike Pence. So, really? Are you just learning that from me right now? So, the new head of the DOJ told the president there's absolutely no evidence that the votes were fraudulent or that the election was stolen. And here's how the president responded.
Just say the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman.
Sure, because that's how the law works. That's why the opening to Law and Order goes like this.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups. The Justice Department, who accuses a crime with no proof, and the Republicans in Congress, who make up crap to justify it.
So, keep in mind, what Kinzinger just read there off the DOJ's notes is the heart of the crime, okay? The president knows there's no evidence, and he wants the DOJ to just lie, say that there is evidence of corruption so that his cronies in Congress can overturn the fair election. And at one point, the former president was so spewing so many insane conspiracies, Donahue had to start jotting them down just to keep it straight.
I began taking notes only because at the outset, the president made an allegation I had not heard. And of course, that concerned us. So I simply reached out and grabbed a notepad off my wife's nightstand and a pen, and I started jotting it down.
Then later, his wife came home and said, honey, why did you write Hugo Chavez trained dolphins are smuggling ballots into nuclear hurricanes? Are you having a stroke, darling? Do you smell toast? Now, as the hearings went on, we learned how the president's desperation led him to make shocking requests.
The president was a little more agitated than he had been on the meeting, in the meeting on the 15th. He discussed a variety of election matters. There was a point at which the president said something about, why don't you guys seize machines?
Well, that's a very casual way to end democracy. Hey, guys, why don't you seize all the machines? I'll cancel the elections and just order some secret police for the whole table. You guys want to go halvesies on fascism with me? I hear the brown shirts here are delicious. The former president was told in no uncertain terms by the DOJ and the DHS, you cannot seize the machines. And as crazy as it is to say, none of that was the really crazy part. Because Kinzinger also shared this.
The final email here included a completely baseless conspiracy theory that an Italian defense contractor uploaded software to a satellite that switched votes from Trump to Biden.
Ah, yes, the Italian space conspiracy. Of course, they didn't just pull the Italian space hack out of their butts. They pulled that theory out of somebody else's butt because Republican Congressman Scott Perry forwarded a video from YouTube to Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and Meadows sent the YouTube video to the DOJ demanding they investigate, and they played a clip of it today. And I will say, it started out strongly weird. Here's some guy claiming something by someone.
There was a certain State Department guy whose name I don't know yet. I guess this is probably going to come out in Italy at some point. And he was the mastermind, not the mastermind, but the guy running the operation of changing the votes. And that he was doing this in conjunction with some support from MI6, the CIA, and this Leonardo group.
It's as simple as that. Your Honor, please. My client couldn't have been there on the night of the murder because he was with, I don't know yet, or come out at some point. Anyways, I blame the Leonardo group, or Donatello, Michelangelo, or Raphael. Their payoff was pizza. Their code word, cowabunga, heroes in a half shell. Kinzinger summed up how ridiculous the former president's conspiracy theories were.
This is one of the best examples of the lengths to which the President Trump would go to stay in power. Scouring the internet to support his conspiracy theories, shown here, as he told Mr. Donahue in that December 27th call, quote, "You guys may not be following the internet the way I do."
On the toilet with the safe search off? When acting Attorney General Rosen refused to interfere in the election, the former president turned to Assistant Attorney General for the Environment, Jeffrey Clark. Clark had drafted a letter that the former president liked very, very much. And the letter was intended to be sent to Georgia state election officials. And the letter was going to claim that the DOJ had evidence of massive election fraud, even though they did not. Everyone thought Clark's proposal was crazy, including White House attorney Eric Hirschman.
I thought Jeff's proposal, Clark's proposal, was nuts. I mean, this guy said at a certain point, you know, listen, the best I can tell is the only thing you know about environmental and elections challenges is they both start with E. And based on your answer tonight, I'm not even certain you know that.
To which Clark replied, of course they don't. Environment starts with an N, and election starts with an L. Duh. Then, as with all the ex-president's criminal schemes, it was time to hear about Rudy Giuliani's role.
I remember ever recommending to anybody that Mr. Clark, meaning Jeffrey Clark at DOJ, be given election-related responsibilities.
You mean beyond the president?
Correct.
Well, beyond the president, I do recall saying to people that somebody should be put in charge of the Justice Department who isn't frightened of what's going to be done to their reputation.
And if there's anyone who's proven he doesn't care about what happens to his reputation, it's Rudy. I say we need someone in charge of justice who won't mind being remembered as a wine-drenched fascist apologist who betrayed his nation next to some discount dildos. Rosen refused to send Clark's letter to Georgia, so Clark convinced the president to give him Rosen's job as the head of the DOJ. That led to, let's say, a tense meeting in the Oval Office. At the meeting, Donahue expressed why he had doubts that Clark was the man for the job.
I made the point that Jeff Clark is not even competent to serve as the attorney general. He's never been a criminal attorney. He's never conducted a criminal investigation in his life. And he kind of retorted by saying, well, I've done a lot of very complicated appeals and civil litigation, environmental litigation and things like that. And I said, that's right. You're an environmental lawyer. How about you go back to your office and we'll call you when there's an oil spill.
Surprise move, the January 6th House Select Committee scheduled a new public hearing Tuesday with its witness shrouded in secrecy.
A surprise hearing, in fact, that wasn't on the schedule this time yesterday.
The House January 6th Committee will hold a surprise hearing.
Are you looking to surprise your lady with a gift that shows you still care after all this time? Then give her a surprise hearing from the January 6th Committee. Made available exclusively by Tiffany's Father's Plot to Steal an Election. Handcrafted by thousands of hours of deposition and the giant cojones of Liz Cheney. With a special Cassidy Hutchinson insert. Make her remember the first time she heard those three little words. The surprise January 6th committee hearing.
Every coup begins with
me. The House committee investigating the Capitol attack scheduled a last-minute public hearing for today with former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, and it was wild.
The hearing that can only be described as cuckoo, ooga, psh, holla, hachi-machi.
We learned that on January 6th, Trump knew the crowd had weapons, that he tried to get the metal detectors removed because, quote, they're not here to hurt me. He got mad at Bill Barr over lunch and threw a plate full of ketchup at the wall. And that when he was found out that his limo was not going to the Capitol, he lunged for the throat of a Secret Service agent and tried to grab the steering wheel. I mean, isn't that unreal?
Today's surprise hearings did not disappoint. It was loaded with shocking eyewitness testimony about the behavior on January 6th of former President Fraudy Krueger. Hutchinson made it clear that everyone in the former president's inner circle knew that bad stuff was gonna go down on the 6th.
I went back up to our office and I found Mr. Meadows in his office on the couch. He was scrolling through his phone. I remember leaning against the doorway and saying, I had an interesting conversation with Rudy, Mark. Sounds like we're going to go to the Capitol. He didn't look up from his phone and said something to the effect of, there's a lot going on, Cass, but I don't know. Things might get real, real bad on January 6th.
So the president's chief of staff knew there could be terrible consequences and went ahead with it anyway?
Huh? What? Yeah, oh, yeah, I think this rash might be an STD, but I don't know. Let's put on some Marvin Gaye and just see where the evening takes us.
The president really wanted to accompany his mob up to the Capitol, but White House lawyer Pat Cipollone really did not want that to happen for a damn good reason.
I saw Mr. Cipollone right before I walked out onto West Exec that morning, and Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
Every crime imaginable! We're talking treason, sedition, conspiracy, obstructing a federal process, attempted murder, fish fondling, grand theft centaur, assault and peppery, ripping the tag off a mattress, and rebroadcasting a game without the express written consent of Major League Quidditch. By the way, we also learned, according to Deputy Chief of Staff Tony Ornato, that what the last administration kept calling a peaceful crowd on January 6th was, in fact, armed to the teats.
We now know that the violence was not a byproduct. The violence was intended, and Donald Trump knew and communicated out loud that he was never at risk against AR. He was told there were ARs, there were flagpoles with spears attached to them, homemade crude weapons, knives, others. The weapons were described to him by Tony Ornato. And he said, that's fine. Take down the mags. They're not going to get me. He knew who they were going to hurt. We also know that he intended to be there. So he thought that the prospects for successfully pressuring Pence to do something we already know that he knew was illegal from the hearing last Thursday was also the plan all along until he gets in the car. And the Secret Service today confirms that Trump was mad when he got in the vehicle because he wanted to go to the Capitol. We also know that his role in the fake electors scheme is different, knowing about that planned movement, the planned OTR to the Capitol.
Of course, the world now knows that the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6th had many different types of weapons.
That an individual was in a tree, maybe a white male, about 6 feet tall, thin build, brown cowboy boots. He's got blue jeans and a blue jean jacket, and underneath the blue jean jacket, the complainant's bolt saw a stock of an AR-15. He's going to be with a group of individuals, about five to eight other individuals. Two of the individuals in that group at the base of the tree near the porta potties were wearing green fatigues, green out-dressed house fatigues, about 5'8", 5'9", skinny white males, brown cowboy boots. They had Glock-style pistols in their waistband.
8736 with the message that subject, weapon on his right hip. Copy that, he's in the tree.
Motor 1, make sure BPD knows they have an elevated threat in the tree, south side of Constitution Avenue. Look for the Don't Tread on Me flag, American flag face mask, cowboy boots, weapon on the right side hip.
I got three men walking down the street in fatigue while carrying AR-15, copy at 14th and Independent.
So, Ms. Hutchinson, is it your understanding that Mr. Ornato told the president about weapons at the rally on the morning of January 6th?
That's what Mr. Ornato relayed to me.
I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here.
So, he was cool with his mob being armed because he knew he wasn't the one they wanted to attack. Hutchinson talked about the day Bill Barr went on the record saying there wasn't any fraud in the election.
And I noticed that the door was propped open and the valet was inside the dining room changing the tablecloth off of the dining room table. He motioned for me to come in and then pointed towards the front of the room near the fireplace mantel and the TV, where I first noticed there was ketchup dripping down the wall and there's a shattered porcelain plate on the floor. The valet had articulated that the president was extremely angry at the Attorney General's AP interview and had thrown his lunch against the wall.
So what? You know who loves double standards and likes to smash things? This guy.
Oh, ah, gosh, sir. Ah. Whoa.
Ah. You're going to ruin everything for me. God damn it.
Oh, no.
God damn it. Oh, God. No, don't do it. Don't go. No, no, no. Oh.
Was this the only instance that you are aware of where the president threw dishes?
It's not.
The greatest quote in the history of congressional hearings. Evidently, the former president breaks a lot of dishes, which is why his handlers make sure his meals are served only in bucket or edible bowl.
We have received evidence of one particular practice that raises significant concern. Our committee commonly asks witnesses connected to Mr. Trump's administration or campaign whether they've been contacted by any of their former colleagues or anyone else who attempted to influence or impact their testimony. Without identifying any of the individuals involved, let me show you a couple of samples of answers we received to this question. First, here is how one witness described phone calls from people interested in that witness's testimony. Quote, what they said to me is, as long as I continue to be a team player, they know I'm on the right team. I'm doing the right thing. I'm protecting who I need to protect. You know I'll continue to stay in good graces in Trump world. And they have reminded me a couple of times that Trump does read transcripts. And just keep that in mind as I proceed through my interviews with the committee. Here's another sample in a different context. This is a call received by one of our witnesses. Quote, a person let me know you have your deposition tomorrow. He wants me to let you know he's thinking about you. He knows you're loyal and you're going to do the right thing when you go in for your deposition. I think most Americans know that attempting to influence witnesses to testify untruthfully presents very serious concerns. We will be discussing these issues as a committee, carefully considering our next steps.
It's going to be okay. I think you got a good chance of being the case. But you know that kid, you know, from the city we're talking about? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The kid turned out to be a rat. As soon as he got pinched, he ratted everybody out. He ratted us all out.
I only tell you one time. Don't f*** me. Don't you ever try to f*** me.
I never made a promise I couldn't keep. I knew if I ever broke my promise, I'd suffer the consequence.
Is that a threat?
The bottom line, though, is this testimony is stunning. You have others who are weighing in here behind the scenes through her testimony. Listen, I think it does move the ball in this hearing. This testimony was very compelling from beginning to end. She obviously had access to all of the players.
I've been defending the president against the charges of incitement to riot. I've seen the same speech he's given dozens of times. I've seen him accused of trying to foment violence with no violence at all coming as a result. So I've been defending him. But after yesterday, when she testified that he knew that there were guns on property and that he still encouraged people to go down to the Capitol, that certainly changes my mind.
There's 1,000 text messages that we know that we haven't seen that he said that were privileged. We also know that Mark Meadows and others are fighting their call detail records. Why are they doing that? Because ones and zeros is a tremendous weapon. And with that kind of data at the hands of the committee right now, I don't think the American public has seen anything yet. I actually believe Cassidy Hutchinson was the bridge to the following, I'm being very careful here, Nicole, a bridge to the following hearings based on the operational planning and the data the committee still has in its back pocket.
We haven't seen anything yet.
Also, in comparison to Ms. Hutchinson's courage, the committee played some footage of their interview with disgraced former National Security Advisor General Michael Flynn, who seemed disinclined to be forthcoming.
General Flynn, do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified?
I said.
Do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified morally?
Take the Fifth.
You believe the violence on January 6th was justified legally?
Fifth.
General Flynn, do you believe in the peaceful transition of power in the United States of America?
The Fifth.
You were a general in the United States Army. You swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, not deny its bedrock principles. How does Michael Flynn sing the national anthem? Oh, say, can you fifth, everybody, what so proudly we fifth by the twilight's fifth, whose broad stripes and fifth, o'er the
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.